This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Resolute Square.
Welcome to The Zero Line, produced by Resolute Square. I'm Sergeant Sarah Ashton Cirillo of the Armed Forces of Ukraine, and every week we'll be bringing you inside Ukraine's war for liberty and liberation against the Russian enemy, while explaining how a victory by us on the battlefield isn't just vital for the Ukrainian people, but for the world as a whole. We will push back against the lies regarding this war for freedom and take you straight to the front lines of the fight for democracy.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Zero Line. I'm Lisa Senecal, executive editor of Resolute Square, and I am joined today both by Sarah Ashton Cirillo, as always. Sarah, it's wonderful to have you here.
Lisa, as usual, it's great to be here. And as you said, both, we have a special guest, and I can't wait for you to introduce him.
We're so honored and privileged to have Oleksandr Misienko here with us today. He is the head of the Kyiv-based Center for Military and Legal Studies and a friend of Sarah's, former work partner. So thank you so much, Oleksandr, for being here with us.
Thank you very much for having me. That's a big pleasure, believe me.
It's great to have you. And when we mentioned about bringing you on as a guest, the entire Resolute Square family was excited about this because you have a tremendous amount of understanding and insight from both the military perspective and also the legal perspective, the political side of things in Ukraine and across Europe and the world, really. Over the last month, while I have been working in Washington, D.C., and now in Panama and in Mexico, I'll be joining you back in Kyiv very soon, within the next couple of weeks. Can you tell the audience what's been happening over the last month or so on the ground in Ukraine? I know you went to a Defense Council meeting in France. I also know that you have been very busy in speaking with people on the national television as to what's happening in Ukrainian national television. Explain to our audience what you're seeing right now over the last month.
Well, thank you. I need to say, first of all, about the situation on the ground when we are speaking about frontline, because it's very important. And what I can see right now is that Russians try to continue their offensive operations, especially on the eastern front line. But what I can see is that Ukrainian forces doing all the best and everything possible in this situation to stop these attacks. And you know that Russians' plan was to continue offensive operation, and they was planning to captured all Donetsk Oblast till the end of the 2023, till the end of the last year. So they didn't. And that's why I can say that Ukrainian forces have a success in this. Of course, Russian forces have some tactical, they have tactical success on the ground because they move to, 1, 2, 3 kilometers. Not very much, but they continue. And Ukrainian forces try and do the best to stop them. Yesterday, our Minister of Defense and our military authorities, they've been on the Kupiansk direction near Kharkiv, yes. Our Commander-in-Chief, also General Zaluzhny, been there. And commander of the ground forces of Ukraine, and they were speaking, and they are just telling that they are preparing not very good surprises for Russians. So that was very good. And what I can see is that, of course, Ukrainian forces continue pressure on the Russian forces in occupied Crimea. That's also very important. And if, of course, we will have more missiles, like Scalp G, like Storm Shadow. Also, we expect that probably it could be Taurus, German-made missiles, German-produced missiles, and also Attackams from United States. We can move forward, because we are very successful in our operation against Crimea. And also in Ukraine, in our internal issue, what I can see that, you know, it was like a little bit situation with the questions, what will be next, what will be in the nearest future? Because last year, in the beginning of 2023, we understood, and people here in Ukraine, they understood that, look, we are preparing for counteroffensive operation, and we will move forward. Now we are thinking, of course, personally me, I understand what going to be, because I understand that we need to be in defense during short this period, during nearest few months. And then, of course, we need to be prepared, probably, if we will have opportunity, if we will have enough power, I mean enough power, enough weapons, enough arm, we need to be continue and prepare for probably future counteroffensive operation.
Let's talk about temporarily occupied Crimea. Ultimately, I received a lot of heat in Russian media about a week ago because I was on television in the United States and I stated clearly that I didn't expect the Kerch Bridge. And for those listeners listening, the Kerch Bridge is the bridge that connects Ukrainian Crimea, temporarily occupied Crimea, to the Russian mainland. And it was built after Russia invaded Crimea. I said I didn't expect it to be standing. And I also expected our troops, my colleagues in the defense forces, to have success in Crimea. The Russians immediately accused me of terrorism, which is one of their favorite lines to attack people with. Can you explain to our audience the importance of temporarily occupied Crimea to Ukraine, but also to Russia, and why it's such a focal point of the attacks by our defense forces to bring back Crimea under Ukrainian governments?
First point, that Russians illegal made annexation of Crimea in 2014. And you know that there are several resolutions, a lot of resolutions of General Assembly of the United Nations, that Russians need to demilitarize and need to move back from Crimea. But what Russians did during these years, they moved to Crimea a lot of weapons, a lot of systems, and even more than it used to be in the Soviet Union period. So you can imagine this. So Russians using Crimea huge military base. From this military base, they are continuing their operation on the occupied territory, Ukrainian occupied territory on the left bank of Kherson and Zaporizhia and southern region of Donetsk Oblast. And second point, so that's why they have a lot of weapons, a lot of stockpiles there in Crimea. And they moving these weapons from Russia using the Kerch Bridge. So that means that they are using Kerch Bridge for their military needs and their continued war and active aggression against Ukraine. So, you know, that's a failed accusation and fake accusation against you.
Thank you for your support. It's good to have a lawyer of your esteem, yes, to be vindicating me. So thank you.
Yes, that's military object. If we are looking, because Russians using this bridge for continued aggression against Ukrainians. So, and for occupying Ukrainian territory illegally. So that's why, if we are talking about the target of Kerch Bridge, that's a legal target. That's so according to the international humanitarian law. So that's the third point. And the first point that's very important, because Russians using Crimea not only like the threat against Ukraine, but against NATO countries in the Black Sea region, against Bulgaria, Romania, and Turkey. And also, by the way, I need to say and explain that, look, Russians have right now in the Black Sea caliber missiles, submarines, and ships. They are also having ships with a caliber missile in the Mediterranean Sea. And that's also the threat, not only for Ukraine. That's also very important to understand. And so that's why we are talking that Crimea is very important. And in this way. And Russians, they are really afraid. They are really afraid, and they are talking that Ukrainian forces can destroy their air defense systems in Crimea. They are afraid that Ukrainians can move on, because we have right now a small but a place on the left bank of the Kherson, and we are continuing our operations there. So yes, they are really disturbed because of this, and they are talking that, look, what we gonna do if Ukrainian forces will be closer to Crimea. And that's why I am almost confident that then Putin will make a statement that, look, we will use nuclear missile just to blackmail West.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
We've certainly heard that before. That wouldn't be the first time we heard that from Putin. And he gets some kind of a reaction, but I think he's getting diminishing returns every time he says that now. I want to ask you a little bit about not only the psychological state of the people of Ukraine at this point, as we're heading into the third year now of the war. From the very beginning, many folks, including all of us at Resolute Square, as soon as the invasion happened, were urging that Ukraine be given everything it needed to defeat Russia and Putin and end this quickly. Clearly, that hasn't been the outcome of what has happened. So we do have a war of attrition now. I get the sense from talking to Sarah and everything that I read and see that the people of Ukraine are incredibly committed to a complete and total victory, and including in Crimea. There will be total territorial integrity. So I have a better sense of the Ukrainian people. Do you think there is a price that Putin is paying in Russia for this going into the third year now? And he's emptied the prisons. I don't know who continues to be left for him to be using as cannon fodder. But is there opposition building?
Well, you know, they are also using now people they used to. They have mercenaries, head mercenaries from Nepal, and now I can say that they also have mercenaries from Africa, because we saw an example. For example, a few days ago, armed forces of Ukraine, they saw mercenaries from Africa, from Somalia, from Mogadishu. So they are trying to move mercenaries from everywhere, but and also from jails, also from the prisons. Yes, they are continuing this. And also what I can see, that's very important to tell that, look, now what we can see, if we are talking about Russian forces, that they do not have so strong morale as they used in 2022. Because, look, now they are asking some questions to their commander. Sometimes they are talking that, look, we do not have enough ammunition, we do not have enough weapons, probably we need to go back home, and so on. Of course, Russians trying to use some kinds of repression against them, of course, and they will continue. But, you know, when we are talking about opposition, what I've noticed, and examples of this war and experience of this war have studied me, that this opposition can be not only from, you know, the leaders of the liberal wing opposition, which are around the world right now, Russians, yes, because they cannot live in Russia, we understand this in these conditions. But this opposition can be from these people, soldiers, which are continuing war against Ukraine. Remember the example of revolution, Bolshevik revolution in Russia. Yes, that was who did it? Who were these people? Sailors and soldiers from the front line of the World War I. And they killed their commanders and officers and moved to Petrograd. Look on the situation last summer, 2023, Prigozhin. He was with his people against Ukrainians. You know, they were terrorist Wagner groups. What they did it against Ukrainian people. That was terrible, but who did it? They moved on Moscow. So I presume that these people from these soldiers can repeat the same. And they can have a new leader. I don't know who will be him. And then probably they can be, you know, like in huge bomb. They can demolish this bomb. And then I don't know who can use this situation. Maybe liberal opposition, maybe someone else. But I think that these protests will come from there, from their military camps, because they will not have enough weapons, ammunition, and so on. Yeah.
Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Let me ask you a question, continuing along this line of thinking, because it was a great question from Lisa about the morale and where you're discussing the internal threats to Putin. Recently, the armed forces of Ukraine exchanged prisoners of war for the first time in many months. We were able to receive 230 of our heroes back from Russia, and the Russians received 248 people back. Of that 248, 180 of them were convicts, were felons. Vladimir Putin and the Russian military requested these felons to be returned, these convicts, as opposed to regular soldiers, be them conscripts or long-term contracted soldiers. Do you think this is because of what you're saying, that Putin has more control over the convicts, therefore he's trying to take them out of the prisons again and take them back to the front versus regular soldiers? Or what is the reason to have requested almost 200 prisoners back?
I agree with you, because they, you know, they're trying to show, and Putin tries to show that, look, you will have a new future if you will go to the war against Ukrainians, so you can have amnesty and so on and so on. But they are dying a lot in these actions on the front lines, Russians prisoners. So, but what I can see that he afraid his own people. He afraid. Because what? How is he thinks? That, look, if we will take people from the, if we will take people from ordinary families, I don't know, from somewhere, people will be disturbing. They are asking the questions. Why? Where are my relatives, my son, my husband, and so on, my father? Where are they? Why is this happening? And who will thinking about prisoners? They're thinking that, look, everyone forget about them, so we can use them as we want. So that means that, and by the way, look on the very interesting point. Russians continue to use FPV drones. They are not using so much right now for their offensive actions, people. Because why? They have problems with the people who are ready to go to these attacks because they understand that they cannot return back from these attacks, and they are trying to change this by drones. Yes, that's the point. It's not about that they are trying to use, you know, modern technical warfare and so on. Of course, they will tell about this, that they are using and so on. And so I think that the problems in this, because, and that's why they are trying. And of course, problem in artillery. They lost a lot of artillery systems. So they are trying to change this by drones and change the people. So that also mean that, of course, they have a lot of people. If you are listening to Russian Minister of Defense Shoigu, you tell that, look, we have 25 millions and we can mobilize 25 millions. How? I want to see how you will mobilize this 25 millions if they mobilized in 2022, 300, yes, 350, and so thousands. And so what? They had the problems with this because of the military camps, prepared them, logistics, and so on and so on. A lot of problems. Of course, we cannot and we don't need to underestimate them or overestimate it. That also will be a mistake to do that. But what I can see is that right now, Russians try to show, especially to the Western audience, people in Europe, in United States, in Canada, everywhere, that we are going, if we are going to the war of attrition, we will have more power, we have more people, we have more weapons, and we will get victory. So stop to support Ukrainians. You need to think about your internal problems and so on, and just let's go to the negotiations, to the negotiations table. But that's a huge mistake, and that's a trap which Putin's tried to do, especially for Western audience, because they're trying to show this like a panic, you know. But look, if they are so powerful, if they are so strong, where is their ballistic missiles? Why they are using ballistic missiles from North Korea? So powerful. Look now, I saw the face of Kim today from the North Korea. He looks happy. Oh my God, I'm helping Russia. Somebody wrote about me. I'm so happy, yes. Let's prepare to the war against South Korea. Yeah, Putin asked me about help. So, but what does it mean? So look, that means that Russians, what they did, they was helping to produce North Korean missile, like Iskander, and now they are asking this missile. So feel the difference. But Russians try to show that, look, we have a lot of powerful still.
If I may jump in here, Lisa, if you don't mind, I want to ask another question of Alexander. You brought up North Korea. Yesterday on my Twitter feed, I put out a story that in exchange for this technology, the ballistic missile technology from Russia, not only was Russia getting back from North Korea the actual made arms, but North Korea had agreed to export 500,000 North Koreans to engage in basically slave labor, not at the front, but doing construction work and things of that sort. Can you talk a little bit about Russia's use of slavery as a way to carry out their war economy regarding people being brought in from former Soviet states, North Korea, Africa, etc.? Could you talk to the audience a little bit about that?
Yeah, because they're trying to use these people like as slaves because they are without any IDs, any documents there. So they are like, you know, in illegal status in Russia. So Russian authorities do as they want with them. And they are using for different kinds of hard work, for example, on different factories and so on. On the factories of defense industry also, for the hard work, very hard work. And also, we had an experience and saw that Russians was trying to use them, for example, for very hard work, you know, on the back, on the front line, to construct some defense positions, to dig some trenches and so on. In one condition, they can have Russian passport, Russian ID. If, for example, one of these people will be prepared and ready to go to Russian army and to sign the contract with Russian army and to go to the front line, at least for 1 year, then they will have Russian passport. Yeah, of course, no problem. And they, if you will return from the front line, you can live in Russia and so on and so on. But a lot of them cannot return from the front line. We understand why, the reasons of this. So, yes. Russians trying to...
I have to say it. They don't return from the front lines because the armed forces of Ukraine has enough success in unfortunately for these people's families, but not unfortunate for the Ukrainian people, we kill them. We are carrying out incredible amounts of casualties against Russian troops on the front lines. We're approaching 400,000 casualties against the Russians since the beginning of the full-scale invasion. To think about that, that's more than some cities will have over the course of generations, approaching 400,000 dead and injured Russians. And so you just brought up a great point again, unfortunate point for humanity, but an important point for this show, that not only are they giving convicts the ability to go ahead and get their records cleansed and be brought back into society, but they're bringing slave labor in, either forcing them to work in factories. But if these men are willing to go to the front on behalf of Russia and they survive, which is highly unlikely, then they get given a piece of paper which allows them to be a Russian citizen. It's the most unbelievable extortion and blackmail that we could really imagine taking place in 2024.
This is just a form of human trafficking, right? It's exactly what trafficked people are promised before they are trafficked, and they agree to go forward with what's being asked of them, only to find out that's not really what the intention of the state or the individual was, and there is no point that they are going to end up being free people again, no matter what goalposts they reach, no matter what criteria they fill. It's always going to be moved a little farther out and a little farther out. And, you know, you hold out the passport or whatever other documents these people need, or the money to go back to their families. And it doesn't happen because the intention was never to do that. So, Alexander, I want to ask you about the profound differences between Russia, China, Iran, these countries that do treat their people with far less than normal humanitarian and civil rights, versus the countries that are working to support Ukraine and the Ukrainians themselves. Can you, I think we don't talk enough about what the philosophy, what people in Ukraine have grown up with as an expectation of civil society, and what democracy is, and how they should be treated and represented by their government, versus the people who have invaded them or are assisting Putin?
First of all, we are completely different people. And Putin tries to explain that, look, Russians and Ukrainians are the same. We are the same nation, so one nation. There are no Ukrainian nation, only Russians. We are all Russians. What he did, he even said once that probably it looks loving, even like civil war. How it can be civil war in sovereign nation? We have sovereign nation, Ukrainian, free people here. We have independence, and we wanna be independence. We wanna be independent country, and we want to live according to the Western values. That means freedom of speech. That means that human rights. That means democracy. That means everything for us. It's very important. And look, even now in Ukraine, when we are in war, we have parliament. We have discussions in Ukrainian media. We have opposition, which criticize Ukrainian government. Yes, we have this. We have opposition media like in ordinary European country. So we have the same now. And that's also very important. We have different discussions, even hard discussions. For example, now about the law of mobilization. The bill of mobilization, new, how to continue this. We have a lot of discussions here in the civil society between member of parliaments and here in media, like ordinary country living according to democratic values and standards. And also, Ukrainians love freedom. You know, we are loving freedom. And if, look, if we are compare Ukraine and Russia, for example, or Iran, China, we saw some, you know, opposition movements in Iran, for example. But that seems not enough, you know, this pressure from civil society. Yes, because if you will see Ukrainian experience, we had experience of Maidan, of Revolution of Dignity. That was because that we had President Yanukovych, which wants to do the same like Lukashenko with Belarus. Yes, so, and that was... And look, if you will, and Ukrainians, peaceful nation, we are just trying to defend our nation, our land, our people. That's all. We, but look on the Russians, the difference, which they are continuing building empire, unfortunately, in the 21st century, they are continuing building empire. They have empire in their minds. And they are not. We are thinking about our internal issue, but Russians thinking about external issues. And they are thinking that, look, we cannot fix our problems internal here, somewhere in Tver, in Tomsk, or Tambov. We are do not thinking that, look, we are continuing using coal mines, but we have a lot of gas, which we are continuing to supplying somewhere. And but look, we need to go against Ukraine or against Georgia or against Moldova or Baltic nations. What are they thinking? Imperial minds. That's also the difference. And also the difference that we want to have democracy values, and we want to have elections, free elections here. And we also want to change our governments, our parliaments, and our president. Through elections, normally. That's a very normal situation. Look in Russia. We cannot imagine that, look, Mr. Poroshenko, Mr. Zelensky will be 20 years or 25 years. He will be like a president. That's impossible in Ukraine. Because we have two terms according to the constitution, and that's all. So that's also, we cannot imagine this in Ukraine. So that's very deep. And what I can see that this war is a war that's really the war authoritarian governments against and authoritarian worlds, world against the democracy world, against world of democracies. And that's writ to all democracies. Because look, if Ukraine, imagine if Ukraine will lose. So look, Kim has already happy face. And he talks about the war against South Korea. Yes, he looks on the Iranian authorities. They are talking about the war against Israel and so on and Western world. China, they will also see the if Western countries and camp of democracies will be not so strong. So Chinese authorities will sink in and Communist Party. So look. We can move on Taiwan, for example, and or we can move on, I don't know, somewhere near Philippines, where they are using their ships, naval ships, to block in, yes, Philippines ships. So that's that means a lot of threats. But what I can see, they cannot have a success if Western countries will be united with Ukraine. They do not have really chances because they will see an example of this democracies and Ukrainian fighting in this, I think, for our liberty and freedom can inspire a lot of people.
I want to jump in here. I think it's important. The Resolute Square audience, you brought up a statement about autocracy, about authoritarianism. That's extremely important to those listeners who listen to Resolute Square. You have lived through the situation with President Trump, his first impeachment, which was tied to Ukraine. And yesterday, a leaked audio came out where President Trump stated that he would not defend Europe. And in fact, he wants to get paid back for the money that NATO nations have not paid the United States. How big a threat in your mind, and maybe to the Ukrainian people, is a second term for President Trump? Explain the thinking when it comes to the view of Ukrainians regarding President Trump and your view regarding security in Europe, security of Ukraine, if President Trump gets into office?
Well, I'm really afraid because of the statements like this that look of NATO and so on. That's very dangerous. Because, look, Russians really expect that if United States will withdraw from NATO, let's imagine what's going to be happen. I can tell you, Russians will use this chance and they will attack European countries. And then they will tell that, look, Russia needs to play leading role in the European defense. Leading role. And that's Russian dream. Shortly, I can explain that it will be a gift for Russians. They are waiting for this. You know that I read unclassified document from 1999, conversation of President Yeltsin and President Bill Clinton. They had a meeting in Turkey, in Ankara or Istanbul somewhere, I don't remember. And Yeltsin was talking to President Clinton that, look, Bill, leave Europe for us. Leave Europe for us. He was talking about this in 1999. So that means that the threat from Russian, they were planning this. When I'm talking about empire, so that was changing from Russian Empire, then Soviet Union, and now they want to restore some kind of Soviet Union or Russian Empire, and then that will going to be a huge threat to Europe. And what Russians try to do? They are trying to divide European Union, to divide NATO. They are trying to support some far-right groups in Europe or far-left groups in European policies. They are trying to sponsor them. And if you are looking on rhetoric of these groups or political parties, every one of them speaking that, look, they have anti-American statements. And also, if you will compare this rhetoric to rhetoric that Putin stated last year, that Germany occupied by Americans. He stated this, that Putin stated. So what he wants to explain is that, look, and Putin stated that Russia need to liberate Europe. So what I mean, and what I want to need to say is that if we can imagine just a moment that United States will withdraw from NATO and cannot guarantee European security, that means that Russia will think that that will be a huge gift for them, a huge gift, because they feel a chance, and then they will divide Europe, because United States and NATO guarantee peaceful defense and security in Europe. If United States will go back or step back, so Russia will use this chance, and then I presume that we will have a very bad and terrible scenario. And I presume that it will mean the huge war in Europe, big war, bigger than now we can see in Ukraine.
Oleksandr Moussienko, I know we're coming to an end of our program. This was so insightful. So the audience knows a little bit of background. Oleksandr and I used to do a show together, a live show, and it was pretty amazing to be able to do a live show. During martial law, people would say there's no free speech. And sometimes I would actually have to hide because Oleksandr always spoke the truth, even if it was controversial. And that's what makes you so amazing, Oleksandr Moussienko. And I hope you come back on the Zero Line. And I just wanted to say thank you for coming in and giving us this amazingly insightful view as to what's happening both geopolitically and at the literal zero lines in this war against Russia and this war for liberty and liberation.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you again, Oleksandr, for being here with us. This was, as Sarah said, incredibly valuable. I hope people share this episode far and wide. This is something that Americans need to fully understand and embrace. This is as critical as this is to Ukraine. This is critical to the entire Western world. This isn't critical to the entire planet. So thank you again for joining us. We hope you will come back again. Everybody, please subscribe to The Zero Line. Follow us on social media at Resolute Square. Sarah is at Sarah Ashton LV. I'm at LC Senecal. And thank you again for joining us. We will see you and talk to you next Thursday.
Thank you all very, very much as usual.
Thank you for listening to The Zero Line, a podcast brought to you by Resolute Square. Resolute Square's mission is to inform, lead, and connect. And The Zero Line is one of the tools that followers of Resolute Square can use to fight back against tyranny while championing democracy. Please like and subscribe to The Zero Line wherever you podcast, and follow us on Twitter at Resolute Square or visit resolutesquare.com. Thanks once more for hanging out at The Zero Line.